Calling all lovers of mystery and fans of a good story. If you haven't already heard me talk about June's journey, you're in for a treat. It's time to don your detective hat in this free hidden object mobile game that delves into the captivating journey of June Parker, a self-proclaimed detective on a quest to unravel the mystery surrounding her sister's untimely death. In June's journey, you get to play as June, deciphering clues and unveiling secret plots within thousands of beautifully illustrated scenes. And did I mention it's set in the glitzy 1920s? New chapters are added weekly, so you will never run out of new thrills to uncover, and you can also personalize and decorate your very own Orchid Island where the story takes place. How sharp are your detective skills? Find out when you download June's Journey on your Android or iOS device, or play online via Facebook Games. Your detective journey awaits.
The year is 976, in the Third Enlightenment. 18th of Kislev, Yom Lasik, Day of Conclusions. 8:41 p.m. We have taken our first spasmodic steps into plague season. Ice crawls down alleys and up walls. Snow drifts turn homes into tombs as a fever of madness rises to fight the crushing cold. The pulse of disease quickens. Throughout the city, bodies twist and rack, monuments to putrid deity. The wretched succumb to the cold. The blessed live, baleful and totemic. Divine flesh, radiating the fervid heat of decomposition to warm the blackened fingers of the children that yet may follow in their footsteps. A lithiferous birthright, the inheritance of all flesh. Irrespective of status and station, come one, come all, and take pestilent communion. Join the chorus of the wailing dead. Sing the hymn of agony, whose meter and key are known to all. I am entering my third day without rest, stealing brief oblivion between the ticks of the clock. There is a bone-deep cold no fire can warm, and a gnawing thirst no draught can slake. I am no doctor. I dispense no cure. I am mortician, gravekeeper, dutifully tending the living dead, that their shrieks might not disturb the blessed few, ignorant of their awaiting fate. More to come. The season is young. Await me by the grave, dear stranger. I shan't be long.
Year 976, Third Enlightenment. I believe it is the 20th of Kislev, Yom Shetev, the day of Shering, and it is 3:32 a.m. That little bastard drugged me. The overgrown imp. He has grown bold since my illness, overconfident and brimming with sauce.
He could do with a bit of humbling, I think. Yes, yes, I think it's time that Ian Markovad take on a case of his own. That's right, my young apprentice. Seeing as how you've outgrown your britches, it is only appropriate that you try on your father's. I don't know what I'm saying. He was right, though. He was right. It is too early in the season to succumb to insomnia. Forced or otherwise. Ophelia should be returning tomorrow, and I shall task her with enforcing a healthy regimen of sleep. I do so struggle to refuse her anything, even against my better judgment. I am still mired in my current case, but I shall endeavor to form a report and record it when I have more than 10 minutes to spend without going into a debt of time. There is a very real possibility that my cases will shorten over the next month or so. Greater frequency, with less extemporaneous detail. Idom, if you happen to have any follow-up questions, you have my address for the winter. Assuming Yalad has not lost his step, delivery should take no more than a week's hard ride, weather permitting. Part of me wishes the Institute could spare a few acolytes here in the north, but I imagine our brave academics are hard at work with their own challenges. I have dallied too long. I cannot allow the comfort of recording to distract me from the rigors of field research. There are so very few in this city with my experience, and fewer still equipped with the faculties necessary to treat the living dead. The year is 976, in the Third Enlightenment, 26th of Kislev, 9:12 a.m. It is the Shavas, the day of reflection, and for all of my stubbornness, I would not dream to labor on this holy day. At least, not where I can be seen. Not here in Jostok. The church has a dedicated sect of brothers and sisters who perform light duties and care on the Shavas. I shall leave them to it, and use this opportunity to record my case notes. Sorry. Case number 005-1. Magifit Movet, Savel Rikavun. The Living Death. And how's that for proper High Mahalite, Idom? If we're going to get persnickety about linguistics, let's take it to the extreme. I'm being petty. You are unfortunately correct. And I should do my best to standardize my language. In fact, I for one had no idea that it was the Luddites who popularized the use of the letter Nun for Nagif instead of Mem. It was Magifa until the Second Enlightenment, I believe. But this is the exact problem with old High Mahalite. Nearly every city on the strait has a different dialect and folk etymology. No matter. I shall continue with Nagif and adjust the syntax of my nomenclature. And I'll stop trying to distract myself with linguistic novelties, however in need I am of diversion. Introduction. Following the first major blizzard of Kislev, the Skordov family was discovered in varying states of decay after one of the mother's co-workers noted her absence. However, when the local mortician attempted to move the corpses, he discovered that they were still alive. After a fashion. Abstract. This case examines the two distinct infections caused by the Sevelrikavun virus. The first and most common pathology being the living death, and the second, walking corpse syndrome. Named for the old High Mahalite words Savel, meaning suffering, and Rikev, meaning decay. Those infected by this mavitic virus are subject to what the uninformed may call decomposition. The truth, however, is far worse. Case history. Sybil Skordova, patient 1, age 34. Her husband, Daniel Skordov, patient 2, age 30. And their two boys, Andriu, patient 3, age 16, and Resh, age 6, uninfected. Each member of the Skordov family was exposed to the living death during Zhostok's most recent blizzard. Judging by signs of blunt force trauma on the skulls of Sybil and Daniel, it is my hypothesis that an invader entered their home to escape the cold, and upon receiving a less than warm welcome, proceeded to subdue the adults through use of force, allowing him to weather the storm without disturbance. Signs of acute hemolytic reaction suggest the source of infection may well have been deliberate transfusion, repeated punctures and hematoma in the radial, brachial, and femoral arteries suggest a lack of formal medical education. Modern transfusions use intravenous cannulation in the median cubital vein, the elbow pit, or the accessory cephalic vein running from the forearm to the wrist. Though I personally prefer the dorsal venous network on the back of the hand, as it is less restrictive for the patient. In modern medicine, we avoid arterial cannulation for transfusion, as it is considerably more painful, more prone to bruising, and far greater pressure, often resulting in unnecessary blood loss, of which there is ample evidence. Practically exsanguinated in the butcher. In any case, the fact that the infected were left alive suggests that the assailant was likely a Nagific cultist looking to spread their patron's infection. The rate of progression and by extrapolated timeline suggests that the parents had been several days infected before the children were transfused. I honestly cannot tell if this hesitation was out of a moment's decency or simply pragmatism, anticipating that the children would be more likely to survive and spread infection if exposed toward the end of the storm. I have anonymously notified Zhostok Control of the possibility of a new mavetic cult, and have educated the sex workers here at the Red Sheet on what symptoms to look out for. Regarding my wanted status, I have had a few close calls with the clergy, but most are pleased to have my expertise. I doubt I shall burn on the heretic's cross until well after winter has passed, and by then I hope to be long gone. That is, assuming that Ophelia... Presentation. After initial infection, Sybil and Andriu began progressing through the early stages of the living death. It begins with chills and a global tingling, like pins and needles, most extreme in the fingers and toes, as the peripheral nervous system begins its partial shutdown. The following loss of sensation in the extremities is limited to pressure, heat, and touch. This severely inhibits fine motor function. Then paralysis of the extremities is followed by a loss of gross motor function, leading finally to total paralysis. By this point, the patient is absent all sensation and nervous signal. Only two signals yet persist in this state. Autonomic functions, that is to say pulmonary, gastric, and circulatory. And, as you may predict, pain. It would not be a blessing of the gods without agony. Mental, physical, or both. Paralysis, of course, is merely a precursor. At this point, the infection begins in earnest. The loss of nervous response combined with the brain's demand for calories results in a process of atrophy and resorption. Effectively, beginning with the extremities, tissues are broken down for nourishment until they wither and rot like fruit on the vine. Under care, this forces amputation as the risk of infection increases. Intravenous nutrition may forestall this process long enough for the body to fight the virus, resulting in a partial recovery. But mevetic infections are among the most persistent, and in the end, recovery before loss of limb is rare indeed. Simultaneous to limb, the eyes, lips, tongue, vocal cords, and eardrums begin their resorption, resulting in sensory deprivation and the inability to speak, leading eventually to madness. The final fate of those who do not fight off the infection is a withered mass of head and torso, completely absent any unnecessary tissues or organs. Thankfully, most die of dehydration long before this nightmare of decay. But here, in the glorious north, life must be preserved at all cost. And so, the family Skordov rots in the sanatorium, silently screaming for a death that will not come. Death, I am forbidden from dispensing.
As a podcast network, our first priority has always been audio and the stories we're able to share with you. But we also sell merch, and organizing that was made both possible and easy with Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell and grow at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. They have an all-in-one e-commerce platform and in-person POS system, so wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. With the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms, Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers. Shopify has allowed us to share something tangible with the podcast community we've built here, selling our beanies, sweatshirts, and mugs to fans of our shows without taking up too much time from all the other work we do to bring you even more great content. And it's not just us. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. Shopify is also the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/realm, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/REALM now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/realm.
Year 976, Third Enlightenment, 26th of Kislev, Yom Shavas, Day of Reflection, 12:41 p.m. Case number 005-2. Magivit Mavet, Sir Velaryk of Un. The living death continues. Walking Corpse Syndrome. Introduction. There are those who are spared the agony of the living death. Those for whom pain is the first to fade. And yet it cannot be said that these lucky few are without their miseries. For they have become walking corpses. And it is they that spread the infection. Abstract. Daniel Skordov, patient 2, developed a common alternative infection caused by the Sir Velaryk of Un virus. There is some debate regarding this classification. A minority academic consensus asserts that this infection is the result of a considerable mutation in the Sir Velaryk of Un virion. This minority advises the nomenclature Rikavun Kahe, which means numb decay. But this theory is not relevant to our purposes. Presentation. After initial infection, Daniel did not suffer from loss of motor control or paralysis. You see, Sir Velaryk of Un settles in the nervous tissues, allowing it to gate electrical signals. The living death presents in the peripheral nervous system, affecting the signals from outside the brain and spinal cord, whereas walking corpse syndrome affects the central nervous system. The first symptom of this pathology is the total absence of pain, a fantasy for many chronic sufferers and the misinformed. But in truth, pain for all of its misery is necessary for our survival, and without it, one cannot know the harm they have suffered. Daniel, like his wife, was restrained during his detainment at the hands of his assailant. Unlike Sibyl, however, Daniel's condition did not restrict his movement. As he thrashed and pulled at his restraints, he suffered numerous abrasions and contusions of which he had no awareness. In the end, it may have been better if these cuts and scrapes had carried his death. But alas, though sweat and filth of days settled into his wounds as the disease ravaged his brain, infection would not claim his life, giving ample time for suffering. He watched and screamed into his gag as his children were infected. He watched helplessly as his wife and eldest son began to rot. When the spasms came, he would have imagined them to be no different than the sudden jerk of a rude awakening. A dream of falling, an absent reminder to live, to breathe. But as their frequency increased, so too would his need to stand. When he was found and brought into the sanatorium for treatment, he began to realize the cause of this impulse. As Sir Velaryk of Un settles into the brain and spinal cord, it is disinclined to allow the patient to sleep. After all, this is time they could be infectious to others. The disease induces symptoms not unlike myoclonic epilepsy. Whenever the patient comes to rest, the body will soon suffer violent spasm in the fashion of a hypnic jerk. These worsen as the infection progresses and are abated only slightly by remaining upright and active. Hence, walking corpse syndrome. The end result, however, is not unlike that of the living dead. As tissues break down due to physical neglect and lack of rest, infection and decay begin to set in, forcing amputations, until eventually sleep deprivation and secondary infection finish what Mavet started. The last thing Daniel saw before cardiac arrest took him, as he stumbled and thrashed his way to and fro across the quarantine wing, was the weeping face of his youngest boy through the window, and the mutilated, half-living corpses of his wife and son. Transmission. Sir Velaryk of Un is blood-borne, and as such, transmission is uncommon, especially in cases of the living death. However, for those suffering from walking corpse disorder,
The combination of open wounds, untreated due to the pain insensitivity, extreme psychosis brought on by sleep deprivation, and the violent nature of the spasms themselves proved to be ample opportunity for spread. Thankfully, Sir Velric of Orden also has a rather low communicability, as it replicates very slowly and has been known to lie dormant for some time in the nervous tissues, not unlike herpetic viruses. At a loose estimate, I would say that 3 in 10 persons exposed to Sevelricavun will not develop infection. A further 2 in 10 will develop a dormant infection, leading to a carrier reservoir in the populace. During active phases, carriers may note tingling sensations in the extremities, lowered sensitivity to pain, localized numbness, especially in the lower extremities, and severe tenderness or burning sensation in the softer areas of the dermis, akin to a herpetic prodrome. Extreme cases may even experience trigeminal neuralgia, a painful excitation of the trigeminal nerve and its branches throughout the face. These episodes may last as long as 3 weeks without abatement. During these active phases, the patient is highly contagious and should practice extreme self-quarantine measures until at least 1 week after the end of their last symptoms. While no cases have been proven, Sevelricavun is likely transmissible through sexual contact, and such activity should be limited to dormant phases and make use of all available barrier contraception. Other than the obvious personal protective equipment, prevention begins with effective sanitation. Sevelricavun has been known to be active as much as 7 days after separation from a host, and further has been seen to survive alcohol treatment at a higher rate than most virions. Therefore, in addition to normal sanitation methods, sterilization by autoclave is recommended for all equipment, and destruction by fire is advised for any materials. Treatment and recovery. In both of these pathologies, there is little to be done as regards to the neurological symptoms. Once the virus takes hold, paralysis and sensory loss is assured. Like most mimetic viruses, Sevelricavun has a remarkably high mortality rate, with fewer than 5% of patients surviving full infection, and the vast majority of these suffering severe and permanent disability, ranging from neuropathy to quadriplegia. During late-stage infection of walking corpse syndrome, anticonvulsants have been shown to lessen the severity of spasms. Sedatives can be employed to force rest, allowing treatment and the healing of wounds. However, it should be noted that most sufferers describe being completely awake under the influence of sedatives and anesthetics. This leads to protracted psychic pain, as the body demands spasm and tic, but they are totally unable to comply. The traumatic nature of these incidences leads me to believe that the patient should only be sedated in the most extreme cases. Restraint is not advised under any circumstances, as pain insensitivity will all but guarantee self-inflicted harm, which will be nearly impossible to treat. Instead, providing a relatively safe and padded environment is preferred. A heavy course of antibiotics can help to prevent infection from self-inflicted wounds, but such treatment is more stalling tactic than anything else. I believe coagulants should be employed, despite their inherent risks. This will help to lessen blood flow from injuries and reduce the risk of blood as a disease vector. For the living dead, as mentioned in part one of this case, intravenous nutrition coupled with manipulation and massage can slow the process of resorption. But atrophy is inevitable and extremely painful. Bed sores are another major risk to the infected, and as such, the patient must be cleaned and moved regularly, twice daily at a minimum. Urinary catheter and colostomy are recommended for obvious reasons. Analgesics and anti-inflammatories are completely useless. Much like a migraine, there is little hope of affecting the pain the patient will be suffering. Maximum dose opioids and anxiolytics are strongly advised. And, wherever possible, however unpleasant or seemingly pointless. Please, please entertain them. They are suffering, and an unoccupied mind is a mind in distress. But more than these, and with as much authority as I can muster, it is my professional and ethical opinion as a medical practitioner and former member of the clergy that those whose infection has progressed to the point of amputation should be spared the agony of their slow and gruesome demise. Bring peace to these poor creatures. There is no moral authority or religious dogma that can justify the horror of imprisonment in your own decaying flesh. Conclusion. The family Skordov is survived by the youngest boy, Resh, who has been taken into the care of Ophelia House until he can be given a proper home. If he has not been adopted within the year, he will be taken into the Institute. Resh Skordov is assumed to be a carrier of the living death and will be educated and prepared for the possibility of later infection and the measures that must be taken. The boy does not speak, and control has been unable to ascertain the identity of the home invader. If there is indeed an active cult of Mavet in this city, I fear we are none of us equipped for the horrors to come.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Heresies of Radolf Burntwine, made in association with Realm FM and Slapdash Studios. Written, edited, and voiced by myself, Zachary Golden. For those of you looking for more Thorb content, please check out thorb.info or patreon.com/thorbcast. There you can join the Patreon for free to get updates, behind-the-scenes information, and transcripts whenever I remember to post them. If you'd like to share the show with new listeners, you can send them to slapdashstudios.com/thorb, and you can also find Slapdash Studios' Discord server, which is the temporary home of the Dear Strangers, until there's enough demand to create a server of your very own. I've also created social media accounts on Twitter at Thorbcast, facebook.com/thorbcast, as well as reddit.com/thorb. If you're interested in collaboration or advertisement with the show, please reach out to me at zach@slapdashstudios.com. That's zach@slapdashstudios.com. I'm sure that many of you would prefer I not have advertisements on the show, and believe me, I prefer to keep this place clear for content and content only. The fact is, podcasting is my only income. That being said, if my Patreon ever reaches a level that I no longer need to hold down a full-time job, I will remove ads from all new episodes, and you can expect to see more frequent releases. At the show's current numbers, $1 a month from each listener would be enough for me to do this as a full-time job, so please consider donating. If you want to help me and the show, please share Thorb with everyone you know. Word of mouth is always the best way to spread, and if you have a moment, please consider giving the show a 5-star rating on whatever platform you use. I know this has been a long end roll, and I really appreciate all of you who are still listening. Look for more episodes very, very soon. And please, be well, dear stranger.